It was the coldest winter ever. Many animals died because of the cold. The porcupines, realizing their situation, decided to group together to keep warm. This way, they covered and protected themselves. But the quills of each one wounded their closest companions. After a while, they decided to distance themselves one from the other, and they began to die, alone and frozen. So they had to make a choice: either accept the quills of their companions or disappear from the earth. Wisely, they decided to go back to being together. They learned to live with the little wounds caused by the close relationship with their companions in order to receive the warmth that came from the others. This way, they were able to survive. I just shared the fable of porcupines by the German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer. I don't need to tell you that being in community can be hard. It can be a bit prickly. Is anyone here living with the little wounds from close relationships in this or another community? When Rev Alex invited me to lead worship today, I thought about the struggles TJMC has been through, both most recently and with the transition in ministerial leadership, and during the 6 years I was a member here, from 2011 until moving to Blacksburg 2 years ago. I have deep ties to this congregation. As a community minister, I worked as both a hospital and a hospice chaplain. But lately, my ministry has been focused on building community, both at the UU congregation in Blacksburg, where Pam, my partner Pam, is a settled minister, as you just heard, and the communities of the New River Valley and Southern Virginia. Community is important to me. Our TJMC covenant speaks to creating the beloved community we desire. And this is going to be a little tough, but I thought it would. Originally, I was just going to summarize it for you, but you have laminated pew rack cards. Thank you. that was a hard one. And at the bottom is the covenant. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with each other, and let's read it together. In order... community we all desire for ourselves, we, the congregation of the TJMC Unitarian Universalist Covenant 2, communicate with compassion and respect, especially when we disagree, celebrate diversity and nurture our inclusivity, embrace one another spiritually and emotionally, promote social justice within our congregation and the larger community, generously support the ministries of the church with time, money, and enthusiasm, and when we have fallen short, lovingly call each other back into covenant. That's a very important last line. When the covenant was being developed, there was pushback on the wording of the last line of the covenant. Some people thought it should say, if we have fallen short, rather than when we have fallen short. Falling short is part of being human. The term beloved community has become somewhat cliche. The term was coined by a 19th century philosopher, Josiah Royce, who maintained that only the Christian model of the loyal community successfully combines the true spirit of universal interpretation with an appreciation of the infinite worth of the individual as a unique member of the ideal beloved community. The term was made famous by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King during the Civil Rights Movement. Building the beloved community is a global vision that we can practice here and take out into all the other communities we're a part of. Building community is an ongoing process. Over the past 25 years, I've experienced varying depths of community in five different UU congregations. The author M. Scott Peck says in his book, A Different Drum, Community Making and Peace, if we're going to use the word community meaningfully, we must restrict it to a group of individuals who have learned how to communicate honestly with each other, whose relationships go deeper than their masks of composure, and who have developed some significant commitment to rejoice together, mourn together, to delight in each other, and make others' conditions our own. According to Peck, any group of strangers coming together to create a community goes through four distinct and predictable phases: pseudo-community, chaos, emptiness, and finally true community. Now you may be thinking, we're not a group of strangers. That's true, but as a congregation of 400 members, you can't know everyone, so I think Peck stages can be useful. Like most, if not all, congregations, TJMC is a community made up of smaller communities, smaller groups that are also communities. Some of these groups are fluid, which means that they function at times as pseudo-communities. A few might function as true communities, and from time to time, communities are in chaos or the emptiness stage. In the first stage, pseudo-community, a group avoids conflict, ignoring or minimizing individual differences. In the interest of functioning smoothly, individuality, intimacy, and honesty are discouraged. I think of the social hour. Generalizations and platitudes are common. My men's group often seemed like a pseudo-community, and at times, we would touch true community. Once differences arise, as they inevitably do, the group moves into the second stage, chaos. The chaos centers around well-intentioned but misguided attempts to heal and convert. The group will often try and smooth over differences. This stage often involves uncreative and unconstructive fighting and struggle. For example, each year, the church board forms a new community and has to work through individual differences, which means each year they have to go through the chaos stage. Getting to true community requires going through the third stage, emptiness, which is the most difficult and crucial stage. Emptiness means letting go of our ego, our tendency to insist, as Frank Sinatra sings, I did it my way. In this stage, members must overcome expectations and preconceptions, prejudices, ideology, theology, and solutions, the need to heal, fix, convert, or solve, and the need to control. The stage of emptiness is ushered in as members begin to share their own brokenness, their defeats, failures, and fears, rather than acting as if they have it all together. In the fourth stage, the transformation of the group from a collection of individuals into true community requires surrendering some of our individuality for the sake of the community. This can be challenging in a culture that prizes rugged individualism. It's a little hot up here. Through this sacrifice of some of our individuality comes true community. Members begin to speak their deepest and most vulnerable parts, and others will simply listen. There will be tears of sorrow, of joy. An extraordinary amount of healing begins to occur. True communities are always reaching to extend themselves to be more inclusive. These stages of community, pseudo-community, chaos, emptiness, and finally true community, also apply to the smaller communities within TJMC. Each of the committees and small groups of this congregation is a community. TJMC is a community of communities. Think about one of the smaller communities here to which you belong. Which stage is it in? Has it passed through one or more of the stages? Is it stuck in a stage? What could you do to help move it into true community? At this year's General Assembly, Paula Cole Jones gave the Sophia Foss Lecture. Some of you probably know Paula from her work here at TJMC. The lecture was titled, Building a Community of Communities. She issued a call for systemic change and identity change for UUs. Specifically, she called for changing the metaphor of our congregational identity from a family, the dominant cultural paradigm, to seeing ourselves as a community of communities, a multicultural paradigm. Families focus on individuals, have a pecking order, and everyone knows where the authority is. It is implicit who you can bring home. Communities, on the other hand, focus on self-growth and self-direction as a whole rather than as individuals. These principles have historically been used by marginalized communities to strengthen identity. Churches already have many communities, and we call them committees and small groups. Seeing ourselves as a community of communities creates the possibility for a different future and is the key to building beloved community. Each of you have your reasons for attending TJMC. A fundamental reason for being in community is to meet our need for belonging, to be related, and to be part of something. Building community not only at TJMC, but beyond these walls, increases the amount of belonging or relatedness in the world. We're in dire need of more relatedness. You know this all too well in Charlottesville from the alt-right rally 2 years ago and the ripples that are continuing to be felt in this community. To belong can also mean being an owner, as in something belongs to me. Belonging to a community carries the responsibilities of ownership. Several years ago at General Assembly, the Reverend Ken Herto, who was then from the UUA Southern Region Congregational Life Staff, led a workshop about community building. He recommended a book by Peter Block, Community, The Structure of Belonging, which you can probably tell from the title, makes the case that there are structural ways to create the experience of belonging. During this leadership transition, this congregation has an opportunity to create a future that is not just an improvement, but one of a different nature from the one you now have. Or not. The choice is yours. Who am I to be telling you that you need to create a new future? I ask you to hear me out and see what you think. For starters, we have to shift the focus to the possibility of community instead of the problems of community. We also need to shift the narrative by coming together in ways that model the future we desire. And I say we, because even though I'm no longer a member of TJMC, these same ideas apply to the UU congregation in Blacksburg and the other communities to which we belong. Block says, the hard part of building community is it's always a custom job. It is born of local people with unique gifts, deciding what to create together in this place. Rev Wick coined the term worship weavers and promoted the idea that we are all ministers. Today, I'm proposing that we are all community weavers. Block also writes, by thinking in terms of a structure of belonging, we begin to build the capacity to transform our communities into ones that work for all. We are increasing social capital, our quality of relationship and cohesion that exists among us. Now, he differentiates between bonding social capital and bridging social capital. Bonding social capital comprises the networks that are inward-looking, composed of people of a like mind. We see this in the increasing polarization and tribalism in our politics and culture. Bridging social capital encompasses networks of different types of people and tends to be outward looking. Now, I helped develop the last strategic plan for TJMC 5 years ago or so, and we were surprised by the feedback that we got that we needed to focus on inreach instead of outreach. And that was, inreach was a way of getting to outreach, but we needed to build our strength within before we concentrated on the outer community. With the recent conflicts, I'm hearing that that's still true. Building abundant community involves focusing on possibility, generosity, and gifts, rather than problem solving, fear, and retribution. Focusing on generosity and gifts are common themes in the UU congregations I've been a member of. Focusing on possibility rather than problem solving is unfamiliar. Another one of Block's ideas that stood out to me is the difference between a retributive community and a restorative community. A retributive community focuses on fear and blame, emphasizes laws and oversight, romanticizes leadership and strong leaders, and marginalizes hope and possibility. Block says, in the retributive culture, cynicism is the norm and becomes the lead story. Cynicism justifies retribution. Retribution is fueled by cynicism. So you get into a nasty cycle. And it sounds all too familiar for what we're seeing on the national stage. In contrast, a restorative community extracts the power out of the current story and produces a new collective story based on possibility, generosity, and accountability. There's a focus on the language of connection and relatedness and belonging. What do we want to create together is a key question. Rather than asking, how do we solve this problem, we ask, what is the possibility we want to live into? Our mindset shifts from valuing what is efficient to valuing belonging. This is a struggle of mine, having spent decades in corporate structures where efficiency is the word. Belonging is also important, but the shift from that. I even found myself at General Assembly kind of critiquing the leadership there for not being very efficient. But they were really focused on belonging, so I'm getting there. Rather than looking to a strong leader, the members of the community become accountable for the possibility of the community they choose to live into. People will be accountable and committed to what they have a hand in creating. Being accountable reminds me of the famous John F. Kennedy quote, slightly modified, "Ask not what your community can do for you. Ask what you can do for your community." Restoration is about healing our woundedness, healing our fragmentation and incivility. As in the fable of the porcupines, we learn to live with the minor wounds from close relationship with our companions, because it is worth it. How do we heal this woundedness? We start in our smaller communities, our groups and committees. Small groups are the unit of transformation. Living into the possibility of an alternative future happens every time we gather together. In each invitation we make, each relationship we engage in, and each meeting we attend. The conversations we engage in are key. Block says, transformation occurs when we invite people into conversations and ask them to act as creators or owners of the community. We invite everyone to be community weavers. Not everyone will accept the invitation, and that's perfectly fine. It needs to be voluntary. We invite people to experience intimate and authentic relatedness. Now, the core task of leaders is to create the conditions for congregational engagement by convening gatherings, naming questions, and most importantly, listening. These conversations create trust, accountability, and connection. The focus on communal possibility, taking ownership, allowing space for diverse and dissenting opinions, and the willingness to make unconditional commitments. A commitment that's entered into conditionally is a barter, it's not a commitment. The questions are carefully constructed to cause people to become an actor as soon as they answer them. Some examples of powerful questions are, why was it important for you to show up today? What is the crossroads you face at this stage in the game? Not we, you. What is the story you keep telling about the problems of this community? Answering these kinds of questions helps us become more accountable, more committed, and more vulnerable. By sharing our answers with each other, we grow more intimate and connected. We move closer to being in true community. I'll close today with a story told by David Brooks in his book, A Second Mountain. Ruthie was a teacher who lived in a small town in Louisiana, one of those people who radiate inner light. Tragically, she died of cancer at 40. More than 1,000 people came to her funeral. Ruthie loved to go barefoot, so the pallbearers from the local fire department where her husband Rod worked carried her casket to the grave, barefoot. Ruthie always thought the dead of her town should be remembered on Christmas, so she created a tradition. Every Christmas Eve, she would go to the town cemetery and put a lit candle on each gravestone. Ruthie happened to die just before Christmas, and as the family was sitting around on Christmas Eve, Rod asked his mother if she would like to do what Ruthie used to do, to light a candle on each gravestone. His mother replied that maybe in other years this would be good, but this year it was just too tough. That evening, Rod's parents attended Mass and drove home early evening by the cemetery. They looked over and gasped. There were hundreds of lights. Somebody else had put a candle on every gravestone. That's how community works. Somebody starts something, a new tradition is established, other people step in and carry it on. We can all be that somebody. We can take a stand for the possibility of abundant community, one that is composed of people that are vulnerable with each other, who are not afraid to face the difficulties, who are willing to let go of ego for the sake of the whole, who focus on the possibilities instead of the problems, who face not just inward, but also outward. We can all be community weavers.